This is Cashing Out with your host, Dustin Sweetelson, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
We are live in downtown Las Vegas at the Circa Resort and Casino. I'm Doug Kazarian, filling in for Dustin. He'll be back with you this coming week. We are tracking UFC 330 co-main event. All speculation. It's speculation. We don't know the actual results, but that Mackenzie Dern took the first round over Jillian Robertson. She was the favorite and the strawweight title holder coming into this one, and she's a massive monster favorite right now as she's been dominating Robertson on the ground. Robertson talking a lot of smack coming into this one, which is nothing totally out of the ordinary. So we're keeping an eye on that. We're scoreless in Anaheim, bottom six. However, the Angels have two on and one out against the Royals. Dobnak in a jam. He's 90 pitches in, hasn't allowed a run, but we'll see if he can get out of this pinch there. The Rangers are still scoreless as they are thankfully fading in the American League West race. They lost 3 of 4 in Anaheim, and now after losing the opener last night in West Sacramento against the Athletics, it's 3-0 A's bottom five. So the Rangers have yet to score through five innings for them in that hitter's ballpark. Pretty wild stuff. Just want to remind you that the college football season is almost here, and betting it blind is a losing strategy. Get the VSiN College Football Betting Guide free with VSiN Pro. It has previews of all 138 FBS teams, our preseason top 50, power ratings, proven betting systems, and best bets from VSiN's sharpest minds. That's not all. VSiN Pro also gets you the NFL Betting Guide, the Fantasy Life Fantasy Football Guide, daily best bets, real-time betting splits, AI-powered prop projections, and 24/7 video on the VSiN Watch app. That is really cool. Try it today for just $9.99 or lock in a full year and save 50% with a VSiN Pro annual subscription. Head to vsin.com/subscribe. That's vsin.com/subscribe. And let's continue our college football discussion with Michael Calabrese of Action Network and also the BMOC podcast as he rejoins us here via the progressive guest line here. And I just want to talk about a couple teams. You were talking LSU. Anything we miss in the SEC? Some of the teams on their schedule maybe by name look harder than this is, or is this schedule going to be as big of a gauntlet before we turn the page and go to some other conferences here?
One team I would point to that I think has the opportunity to present the highest variance would be Ole Miss. If they return to the playoff and rode Trinidad as they did during the college football playoff, I don't think any of us would be surprised. But if he were to get dinged up or to take a step back, you can't overstate the emotional impact of what happened with Lane Kiffin and the way that it fueled that team to play their best football in the postseason last year. And the fact of the matter is, not only did they lose some coaches, they lost some talent, they've certainly taken a downgrade in both departments, but also this element of who's calling plays and losing Charlie Weiss Jr., who was someone who was pulling all the right strings and putting Trinidad in a spot to essentially put, you know, some of the best football on tape of the entire season. I think there's a chance that Ole Miss could be one of those top 10 teams that happens every single year that falls out of the top 25 altogether. It could be a team that loses 3 or 4 games. And if that is the case, and LSU rolls into Oxford in terms of one of the most emotionally packed matchups of recent memory and beats the doors off of Ole Miss on their home field, all of a sudden that's going to put LSU in the catbird seat. And the schedule looking forward looks a lot more manageable for the Bayou Bengals.
All right, and you're right about the emotional lift that departure did, because the team played hard in the playoffs. But I thought that head coach, who was the DC before, he was a complete meathead with it going for 2 in the first quarter against Georgia. In the NFL, maybe with the extra point distance being back, but in college you don't chase points in the first quarter. And yes, Kirby Smart out-dumbed him and made worse mistakes with some of the clock management, but that doesn't mean he's off the hook. I get worried when these situations happen. I've said it with guys like Dan Campbell. The margin of error is just so small. So maybe things come off the rails a little bit, or maybe they just put so much into that game and everything else after that is a giant flat spot. Let's go elsewhere. One future you have circled is Air Force to win the Mountain West. This team was run and gun early in the season, letting it sling, and I was riding their overs because their defense was just putrid, and then the offense stalled. So what do you make of Air Force's futures here at plus $6?
Well, for starters, I trust this coach. He's won 9 or more games 8 times in Colorado Springs. And every time that Coach Calhoun has suffered back-to-back losing seasons, he's gotten off the mat. And in year 3, he's won 10 and 11 games respectively. So there's an element to the service academies, particularly in the transfer portal era, where they can circle the wagons. They're not playing musical chairs with their roster and bringing people in and out via the transfer portal. They have continuity, and I think this is the year to buy in on what Air Force has. As you mentioned, last year they faded. That's with Liam Zarka, their quarterback, sidelined with an injury. He comes back, and if you really want to focus in on when he was playing his best football last year, there was a 4-game stretch pre-injury where he played Boise, Hawaii, Navy, and UNLV. All bowl teams, all high-end G6 teams from last year. In those 4 games, he averaged 227 yards through the air, 134 yards on the ground, 13 total TDs, and only 3 giveaways. To only turn the ball over 3 times in a 4-game stretch where in this, you know, hybrid wishbone, flexbone offense, the ball is in your hands consistently on every play. You're the decision maker. That speaks to him being both explosive and also someone who makes great decisions with the football. I think this is Air Force's version of what Blake Horvath was for the Naval Academy over the past 2 seasons. And when they opened up that offense, that millennial wing T there in Annapolis, you saw what he was capable of as a passer. And I think that's going to be the difference this year. You talked about the defense being putrid. They were absolutely awful. But 2 things are working in their favor this year. They are 3rd nationally in returning production on that side. They also bring back a defensive coordinator, Steve Russ, who served for about 4 seasons about a decade ago. And he had some really good defenses there in Colorado Springs. I think this is an opportunity for him to get this defense right. Isaac Hubert is an absolute table setter, a thumper at linebacker. He also won the Academy's heavyweight boxing title in February. So this team is going to rally around that kid. And when you look at the schedule, it's perfectly set up for Air Force to go on a run. No Power 4 teams, Navy at home, UNLV at home. I have them favored in 9 games. So I'm going over the win total of 7.5 at plus money. And then for them to win the Mountain West Conference at just north of 6-1. Fly, fight, win. Sign me up for the Falcons.
Yeah, they're the 4th favorite, as you saw on the screen a little bit ago. Look, UNLV is a lot of talk with Dan Mullen, but they're not flawless, right? And then you have the altitude advantage in Air Force. You mentioned the quarterback who did wonders and Calhoun, the coach, who I like a lot as well. Yeah, why not take a little piece of plus $6? One team I wanted to ask you about was Boston College. They got hammered under 4.5 wins. It's now 3.5. Unders juice. Now, they're in the ACC, which isn't exactly the murderer's row that the Big Ten and SEC is, but still 3.5 wins, nowhere close to bowl eligibility. Full disclosure, I went to Brown. I root for their head coach. I thought he did a wonderful job when he was with Penn State after the all the thing with Paterno and everything. So I'm a Bill O'Brien guy in terms of calling plays. He's done well with quarterbacks, but this schedule does look pretty daunting, especially the back half. They're at Notre Dame and at Miami in November. They're at Duke to wrap up October. What do you make of the Eagles this coming season?
This could be a mid-season quit fire situation for Bill O'Brien. I think he did an incredible job in Happy Valley. He certainly got off to a great start in Chestnut Hill, but last year they bottomed out at 2-10. They've turned to a Division II quarterback to be the savior. He has absolutely zero weapons. Only one receiver returns with 13 or more FBS receptions. That's going to make it difficult for them to hit the ground running. And you talked about the schedule. 6 times they are going to be double-digit underdogs. It perhaps could mushroom into 7. They are only going to be favored over the Maine Black Bears. That's the only for sure win on this schedule. There's an opportunity for them to run it back, go 2-10 again. And the final piece, and the reason why I'm out on them, is they turn to Ted Roof as their defensive coordinator. This guy consistently has been run out of town at Oklahoma, at Central Florida in recent years. He had a horrible track record as a head coach. He's not the person to come in and work magic with his defensive personnel. So Boston College, yes, they may be in one of the most, you know, favorable Power 4 conferences, but this schedule does not line up in a way that they can just get some confidence in September, get 2 or 3 wins and try to coast over that number. I think it's more likely that they win 1 or 2 games than they get to 5 or 6.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you. I thought that dual threat quarterback, the freshman they had coming out of high school, the highly touted, was going to work out. It just didn't. So like you said, they went to the D2 option. All right, Michael, we really appreciate the time, the extra time you gave us as well, Pat, near, you know, approaching midnight now on the East Coast. So we appreciate it. Good luck this season. I know we're going to see you back here on these airwaves in the near future.
Thanks for having me.
All right. That's Michael Calabrese joining us via the Progressive guest line here. You can catch his work at the Action Network, also on Twitter at East Breeze. a.k.a. X. They're in round four right now in the co-main event in Philadelphia, UFC 330. It is Mackenzie Dern and Jillian Robertson. Now, the live line got up to minus 2,500 after the first round for Dern. She was dominating the mat in the second round. Then it got down to like $7 at DraftKings. Now it's just off the board. So both fighters are comfortable on the ground. They do have holes in their grappling game, but it looks like Dern's been dominating and winning a lot of rounds. Every time I look up, she's in control on the ground. And the live line right now at DraftKings is minus 2,500. It was about a coin flip odds or so, give or take, to go the distance. And, you know, we're approaching the midway point of round four. We'll see. We'll see what happens. We are still scoreless. So Dobnak got out of that jam. One reliever came in to get the final out of that bottom six. So we're now in the top of the seventh. Royals and Angels, 0-0 after they had about 15 runs last night. And that's baseball, right? Depending on who your starting pitching was. I shortchanged the Rangers. They did get one run. So the Angels, the A's as dogs win the first five. They're up 3-1 as they head to the sixth. So the Rangers lost 3-4 in Anaheim, lost the opener to the Athletics in Sacramento last night, and now they're trailing 3-1 after five, and they're supposed to be in the pennant race. Just gutless. They've gone final in Seattle, so we are through week one of the NFL preseason. We'll talk more NFL later in the show. We'll continue to update these two baseball games remaining. We still have the main event. I like Gary, plus about 285 in the main event against I just think he's a dog. He's like a 6-inch reach. We'll talk more UFC straight ahead. We're also going to talk some golf. Scottie Scheffler has the lead. We have a guest with one pick to give you for tomorrow's final round. This is Cashing Out straight ahead on VSiN.
Cashing Out here on VSiN, the sports betting network.
A lot going on in the sports world on this Saturday night. Unusually busy this time of the evening. Welcome into downtown Las Vegas. We are live at the Circa Resort and Casino. I am Doug Kazarian. We are in the co-main event, fifth and final round, about to start in Philadelphia of UFC 330. Mackenzie Dern has pretty much controlled this entire fight. Her strawweight title belt is on the line against Jillian Robertson, and she, right now, at least at DraftKings, is a minus 1450 favorite, expected to go the distance. And we are still scoreless in Anaheim, a diving catch out in center field as the Royals and Angels with one out in the seventh. Craig Kimbrell, now in Kansas City, who knew? Remember, he had the combined no-hitter he blew for Tampa earlier this season? So we are scoreless out there in Anaheim in the seventh inning. Rangers have showed some life, trailing 3-1 after five. Got a three spot in the sixth, still batting. So they now took the lead over the A's in West Sacramento, 4-3. We still have the main event to go in Philadelphia for UFC 330. I got sprinkled a little bit on Ian Machado Carey. He's just got that reach and height advantage. I think will pose problems for Islam Makhachev. But right now, I want to talk some golf. Yes, we still have golf going on there at the FedEx St. Jude Championship this weekend. Spencer Aguiar is going to join us from the Action Network via the Progressive guest line. So Spencer, all season going into these tournaments, Scottie Scheffler has been a favorite, a remarkable favorite in a lot of stops, including the majors. It didn't pan out, but now he has a two-shot lead over Sam Burns and obviously a bigger lead over the others. He's about a minus 230, minus 250 favorite going into the weekend. Can he hang on and finally get a long-awaited win here?
Doug, first of all, thank you for having me on today. And I kind of been coming on these VSiN shows, it feels like, for the last 6 months. We, as you said, have not seen Scottie Scheffler get across the finish line since the beginning of January. And it's been one of those things where we're very close. It's a shot here and there. It's a bad start to a tournament and a surge up the leaderboard. It's the Travelers Championship about 2 months ago where he couldn't get across the finish line against Victor Hovland. And if you just take a couple of those results and flip them around, I don't think it's been as dire as it appears on paper for him. I understand, like, the Scottie Scheffler recipe at this point of his career is win five plus times. And when you're sitting here at the middle of August and you have one victory on the season, it can be considered nothing but a disappointment. But yeah, I mean, like, Scotty's the deserving favorite in this spot. And I think that the one problem that comes into play on a lot of these boards where Scotty is a multiple shot leader going into the final round is books are always going to skew the price a little bit just so you can't back Scotty. And I think you run into some problems underneath. Like, I don't mind the Sam Burns play. I think you can even get it up to plus 480 if you shop around on it. For me, though, like, if I was to play this, I would probably just be throwing darts down the board and hoping that you can catch one of those miracle 61s from a Siwoo Kim or a Hideki Matsuyama or a Tommy Fleetwood. One of these names that, like, we always see in contention entering Sunday and having an inability to get themselves to win a golf tournament. I do wonder for those three names in particular, what it looks like for them so far behind Scotty and no pressure and really, it's almost like, take Fleetwood, for example. I think Fleetwood's the prime name to throw into the mix here. We see Fleetwood when he's in the final group and what happens, and it usually goes south. He can go out tomorrow and kind of just shoot his best round he can. And whether that means he catches Scotty, I don't know. And that's kind of my hesitancy of wanting to get too involved in this board. But it would probably be one of those three names if I was going to back this. But unfortunately, I mean, Scotty probably does get himself the victory here.
Yeah, I mean, Sam Burns hung in minus -8 today to get in the mix. He and Sungjae Im are both two shots back of Scheffler. So pretty wild stuff. You mentioned Matsuyama. He's 70-1. At FanDuel, as he is six shots back, few guys in between him. I guess the biggest difference for me now, in the past, I've laid short numbers with Scheffler going into a tournament, but I didn't do it this year because his putter was just completely letting him down. Like that playoff, he had that short putt. He didn't even lip out. He missed it completely. So yeah. What's been the difference? Is this weekend, is he hitting the putts? Like what's been the difference so far before we move on to a matchup bet that you have?
Yeah, he's getting 5.71 strokes putting. That puts him third in this tournament in strokes gained putting. And it's one of the big reasons. Like I run this recalculated leaderboard after every single round. And what the purpose of it is to try to find the players that are striking the ball the best. And then when you take these recalculated short game baseline statistics, everybody that, like, it's to your point that you just talked about, Doug, like putting is very volatile at the end of the day. You're going to get good rounds and you're going to get bad rounds and you're going to get players who can get hot through short spurts. And kind of what my model's trying to find are who are the golfers who are playing the best golf. And then you throw in these baseline statistics that you would expect them to get coming into the week on specific green complexes. And what does a recalculated leaderboard look like from that? And just to throw this out there, to kind of talk a little bit about this Scottie Scheffler overachievement that we're seeing. Siwoo Kim, according to my baseline numbers with the way that he's striking the ball, should be in first place right now. And I understand with Siwoo, this is, I know you just had on Michael to talk college football, and he does a golf show with me every single week at Action. And I think if I mention Siwoo Kim one more time this year, he might rip out all his hair, because it's one of those things where the data is pointing so hard in this direction of Siwoo, and we just consistently keep getting the putter going in the wrong direction when we need it most. But he's first, Hideki second, Scotty's actually third on there. So he is getting a little bit boosted with that 5.71 strokes that he's gaining putting. But, you know, I don't want that to be too overblown. It's not like we have such an overcorrection that needs a regression that's going to take place here. You're still talking about a golfer that's gaining nearly six strokes ball striking, 5.01 with his approach shot alone. Like, this is kind of the vintage Scotty recipe where it's just hard to catch him when he's going to gain with ball striking and then be a top five putter in the tournament. I just don't think you're going to beat him those weeks. And historically, we've seen that.
Okay, so maybe a flyer on one of the bigger names to have some fun in case Scheffler unravels. But this is a guy, I give him a lot of credit, because Tiger Woods would withdraw if he can't win with like a back pain. He would charge hard. He's pretty reliable for top five and top 10. So I give Scheffler a lot of credit for in the past when he hasn't really been striking distance but finished strong and ran through the tape, so to speak. But I did mention you have a matchup wager you do like for Sunday. Feed the people.
I'm going to take a little bit of value on this play, and it's, you know, for people that don't follow golf, it might be a name that you haven't heard of before versus somebody that has really cemented themselves over the last 12 months or so. I'm taking Jordan Smith at plus 140 over Cameron Young. And I liked Cameron Young coming into this week. I also like Jordan Smith, which is why we end up in this position that we're in right now. But I thought these were very prototypical pre-tournament numbers that we were looking at. And, you know, I've talked about the recalculated leaderboards that I run. And one of the things that you have to be careful of is you don't want to take too much of an overcorrection between rounds. And I think that's the one thing that people do in golf is that you see somebody play well one day and you expect it to continue on day two and vice versa. If somebody plays poorly, there's the overcorrection that it's got to continue. And that's not the sentiment that I'm trying to talk about in this exact example. But what you do get within the numbers is if we call about 140 proper, and it was a little bit more than that to begin the week, I've had about a 25-point move that has occurred over the first three rounds between these two golfers. And it kind of puts you in the spot where, sure, Jordan Smith is still an underdog, but we're starting to now get into real value when we only have to be about 41% to get this right at plus 140. Smith has gained 3.38 strokes off the tee. The approach game has been a little bit shaky for him, but really where the big hiccup has come into play is with this short game. He's lost nearly five strokes over the first three rounds. It took until today for him to kind of even get something going with the putter. The around the green game still faltered to a negative 1.82 return. But I like what I'm seeing with the ball striking right now with Smith, and I think vice versa. It's been a really disappointing week for Cameron Young, who also disappointed last week during his Wyndham start. He was one of the better ball strikers on the board for that tournament and really couldn't get anything going until Sunday. And I understand we're entering Sunday here and, you know, take that with a grain of salt with what's happening here. But almost three strokes that Cameron Young has lost over his first three rounds here. I just think this is a really nice price if you're trying to value shop a number here with Smith, who for me coming into this tournament, like, it may be surprising for some people to hear, but even in a tournament like this with 69 of the best golfers in the world, my model thought that Jordan Smith was a fringe top 20 win equity candidate on the board. So I think you get a golfer that kind of showed a little bit of that today versus somebody like Young, who had aspirations to win this event and now finds himself in 41st place. So number grabbing this price here at plus 140.
All right, you mentioned not to focus too much on how they looked most recently, but he did double bogey on 17, bogeyed 18, so limping in to the final round on that note. Hey, man, we really appreciate your insight. And you got plus money at plus 140, I should mention. Spencer, thanks so much.
Thank you, Doug. I appreciate the opportunity to do this with you.
You got it. Spencer Aguiar from the Action Network joining us on the Progressive Guest Line. Hey, we're going to the main event in the UFC. I'll tell you who and why I like the dog next.
Welcome back to Cashing Out here on VSiN, the sports betting network.
We've reached halftime here of Cashing Out in downtown Las Vegas at the Circa Resort and Casino. I'm Doug Kazarian in the studio tonight and tomorrow night as well. Dustin back in Monday night for the rest of the week. We have a lot going on throughout the Saturday in sports. You wouldn't think it, but we got three WNBA. We got UFC card in Philly, full slate of the baseball diamond. We got golf going on. We've covered a full NFL week one of the preseason. Games going on right now. They're still scoreless in Anaheim. Angels and Royals, bottom eight right now, 0-0. So we'll continue to monitor that game. Pretty wild, all things considered. The Rangers answered with three in the top of the six. So they are through six now. Rangers lead 4-3 at the A's. They've lost 4-5, but are still only 2.5 back in the AL West. So you can't mess around when you're in West Sacramento against these lowly Athletics. So Rangers have the comeback and now the lead 4-3. Mackenzie Dern just retained her strawweight title belt against Jillian Robertson. Unanimous decision victory, full five rounds in the co-main event of UFC 330 in Philadelphia. In the main event, Islam Makhachev is a significant favorite, minus 320 or so, 325 over Ian Garry. And I actually like Garry. He's got like a 6-inch height and reach advantage, maybe like 5 inches. I think his style is going to make this a little bit boring of a fight, and he's going to jab, jab, and move. I think he's going to try to avoid the ground. If he goes to the ground, I don't think Gary's all of a sudden going to fold like a cheap suit. I think the plus 260, there's 280 at Caesars earlier today. I think that's worth a little sprinkle here. I think it's just a bad matchup for Makhachev. You could get plus 430 if you like this to go to the distance with a decision victory, but I wouldn't get too cute. If you really want to do that, I'd split it up because Gary has a chance to get a knockout because I do think the boxing will be his advantage. So the main event coming up there in Philadelphia, it's been a lot of action, a lot of fights ending early, really good knockouts and stoppages. And this is a fun tweet that I think is worth mentioning. Again, this card is in Philadelphia, the city of brotherly love. A $100 bet on the Pennsylvania parlay, Welts, Stoltzfus, would have paid $4,250. A $100 bet on the Pennsylvania submission parlay would have paid $38,900. Congrats to the zero people who had it. Yeah, we always forget that. Sometimes nobody has it. But yeah, there's fighters from the Pennsylvania area that were born in the Keystone State. That sometimes we see this when you go overseas to different countries. You see the handful of fighters on the card. Sometimes people do parlays for all of them. That was funny. There was one guy who won. I think he's from, forget where he's from, but he's like, I grew up an Eagles fan. He's singing the Fly Eagles Fly song to the crowd, and that got them going. So it was a really fun card, and we have the main event standing by. So as that unfolds, I'll continue to update you, but it's a scheduled for five rounds, expected to go the distance. Over 4.5 is minus 160. So Gary and his boxing ability should, I think, at least annoy Makhachev. We'll see how far he can take it. In the eighth, the Angels have a runner on second. Now, there's been some guys in scoring position. This isn't exactly a bunch of no-hitters, but they got to first, just stole second. So one out, man on second, scoreless tie, bottom of the eighth. So the Angels threatening to take the lead in the bottom half of the eighth inning. I'll continue to monitor that. Like I said, a bunch going on. We had three games in the WNBA. Favorites won the last two in the morning. The favorite won but did not cover. The high-profile game was the nightcap here in Las Vegas. The Aces hosting the Lynx. Aces, one of the championship contenders. Minnesota obviously is too, with the best record in the league. They won on the road. They come in as a slight favorite. It got steamed up a little bit to like 2.5, 3. It was about pick 'em. And the Aces made a valiant effort down the stretch, did outscore the Lynx by 5 in the fourth quarter, but they end up losing by 5. So the Lynx took advantage of a strong third quarter, and they are so good. This is a team that sort of had some bad luck. When Nafisa Collier's injury a year ago, they went the full 5 games against the Liberty a couple years ago in the WNBA Finals, some questionable refereeing. This is a team that has yet to break through, kind of like those Sacramento Kings teams that were well-regarded, considered the best in the league, but just never got over the hump and won it all, but came close. So that's where the Kings are. Sorry, the Lynx are in a lot of ways. So they are your favorites. Olivia Miles, definitely going to win Rookie of the Year. She's second favorite for MVP behind Asia Wilson of Las Vegas. So a lot of hoops left. They're going to take about 3 weeks off for the FIBA championship overseas in September. So that'll be interesting. They'll take a break kind of like hockey does with the Olympics, but something to keep an eye on. By the way, the Angels did score an RBI single. It broke through, so the Angels now lead 1-0, bottom eight, and could get some insurance. Zach Nato, remember, he used to bat the top of the lineup. He now bats cleanup for the Halos, so they're still batting bottom eight, one out, runner on first. 1-0 lead, Angels. A lot going on in the NFL, right, with the NFL preseason completed tonight, the first full week after the Hall of Fame game, and VSiN is on the clock for the second annual Pro Football Futures Draft. 13 VSiN hosts. And guess, you got them right there on your screen. They face off in the fantasy football style snake draft hosted by Dustin Sweetelson. And every pick doubles as a handicapping breakdown you can use. Win totals, division winners, player props, and stat leaders. Last year's competitors are all back for round two, joined by three newcomers stepping into the Futures Draft room for the first time. Former NFL wideout Keyshawn Johnson, comedian and sports commentator Nick Bakay. Remember that from ESPN? Advantage Push. And the guru, John Hansen. Don't just watch the Futures Draft. Profit from it. Tune in Thursday, August 20th, 5 p.m. Eastern, only on VSiN, the sports betting network. So what is a Futures Draft? It incorporates value, much like a fantasy draft, the snake draft format, right? Your first pick could be, I don't know, the Panthers to win the Super Bowl, like a huge odds, right? If you think that's the best value, it doesn't mean which is most likely to cash. It's who has the best sort of payout at the end of all this. So you can do an MVP future. You can do a division future, a Super Bowl future, a yes, no for the playoffs. So it incorporates betting value with the odds. I know one of the picks in the Major League Baseball draft was Matt Youmans gave out Cam Schlittler to win the AL Cy Young at 300-1. How about being an odds on favorite at this juncture of the season? So that's obviously great value if you are able to find a 300-1 that's going to be a minus money situation with about a quarter of the regular season to go. So that's something to tune in. So 5 p.m. Eastern this coming Thursday, only on VSiN. The NFL. Preseason is obviously preseason. And as Mark Schlereth, the great philosopher, also former Super Bowl champion, said, the games don't count, but they do matter. And I think it's a great way to put it. There's some people like Victor Cruz who can slip through the cracks and get a shot in the preseason and become an NFL regular season player. And then there's backups. And then obviously you can bet on these games. But, you know, some of these we can glean a lot of wisdom. Like Jeremiah Love looked every bit the part against the Raiders the other night. Now, no one's doubted his ability. We just doubted whether it was worth that high of a pick for a team that's really going nowhere. Kind of like the year before when the Raiders drafted Ashton Jeanty. That just didn't make any sense at all, especially for them who had no offensive line. Now, with Jeremiah Love, this offense, you know, maybe it was just the Raiders' defense that looked horrible, but he looked like he could be a huge weapon, and he's your betting favorite for Offensive Rookie of the Year. He's obviously going to go fairly high in fantasy drafts. I will say, keep this in mind, because going against some of the opponents you go against in college is not the same as being an everyday down back in the NFL. Josh Weinfuss, who does an awesome job with ESPN covering the Cardinals, he tweeted that the running back will be out this coming week as he deals with a sore ankle, according to head coach Mike LaFleur, because he's, you know, there's two LaFleurs now, one in Arizona, one in Green Bay. LaFleur said the Cardinals will revisit Love's status after this week, but he would not commit to a long-term prognosis for Love, meaning i.e. week three, which is the final week of the preseason nowadays, or maybe even an ankle injury that hampers him to the start of the coming season. So that is interesting because he is your betting favorite for Offensive Rookie of the Year. And obviously if you miss a game or two of the early of the season, but it's just something to keep in mind, especially if you're drafting for fantasy. I think it's more important for that because he's a 4-1 favorite or so for Offensive Rookie of the Year. I would just tread lightly because, yes, the Raiders' defense is pretty bad. So some of that just looked bad. And I think Jacoby Brissett's obviously competent. But at some point, they might go to Carson Beck, and he won't look as polished as he did against preseason vanilla defenses when he faces teams in the regular season. I just think it's you want a guy who's usage. When you draft a running back, usage, and Love will have the usage. But how much? I mean, they have a really tough division. They're only expected to win a few games, if that. And maybe the offense is competent, right? They have the best tight end in football, arguably. They have Harrison Jr. and other receivers. But still, I think it's risky just – we saw what happened with Jeanty. Now, a lot of that was the horrendous offensive line, and hopefully no NFL team will ever be that hamstrung with that bad of an offensive line. But it's just something to keep in mind moving forward. Like I said, you can also bet on the preseason. Some crazy stats to get your way. Favorites went 3-14 against the spread if you include last week's Hall of Fame game. So 16 games in week one and then last week's Hall of Fame game. So pretty remarkable stuff, line movement, you name it. I'm really excited for our next guest. You hear him a lot on these VSiN airwaves, the professor, Aaron Moore. We're going to talk some player props. I just touched on Love and what's coming up for this season. He's got some player prop futures for some marquee quarterbacks, including Aaron Rodgers. That's straight ahead here on Cashing Out.
Cashing Out here on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Wrapping up hour two here live in Las Vegas at the Circa Resort and Casino. I am Doug Kazarian. We are tracking a few games going on. It's 1-0 in the ninth. The Angels one out away from a 1-0 victory. The Royals, you got Lofton, the leadoff batter, up with an 0-2 count. So we'll let you know if any funny business happens there when things get crazy. Main event about to start. Both fighters are in the octagon at UFC 330 in Philadelphia. Islam Makhachev, about a minus 325 favorite right now. The comeback on Ian Garry is plus 260. And I said earlier, I like to sprinkle a little bit on Garry. I think it goes the distance, and Garry wins a decision. If you want that exact outcome, it's plus 430. And the Angels did hold on. They threw a combined two-hitter. Royals mustered just two hits, and the Angels win 1-0 after last night's marathon high-scoring game. And that leaves one game going on right now. They're in the eighth in West Sacramento. The Rangers lead the Athletics 4-3 on the road. All right, we're talking NFL right now as we bring in the professor, Aaron Moore, a VSiN contributor via the Progressive guest line. Aaron, I know we text a bunch. We've spoken on the phone. Good to be connected here through the Progressive guest line. Thanks for taking the time late out there on the East Coast.
Thanks, Doug, for having me. And it might be late. It might be the preseason, but it's always time to talk NFL futures.
Yeah, it's always winning time, right? That's what we're talking about. So you have some player props that I think are really interesting because I think the players and the narrative that are involved. Let's start with Aaron Rodgers, expected to be his final season. He's reunited with Meathead McCarthy, affectionately known as Mike McCarthy. And the Pittsburgh native is back coaching his hometown Steelers. And like I said, reunited with his former quarterback when he was the OC in San Francisco and they drafted him out of Cal. What do you make of his passing yards prop here at basically 3150, 3,149 and a half yards?
So, Doug, I took that under, and I think you have to put all these different aspects into essentially like a spreadsheet and look at what's going to happen with these totals. Yes, McCarthy is there. Yes, Aaron Rodgers had a pretty decent season last year. And that total you're talking about, 3,149 and a half yards, Aaron Rodgers has gone over that total every year he has been healthy. But why I'm taking the under, this is the first time in his life he's going to be 43 years old. So I think you look at that total and have to say, yes, McCarthy's back. Maybe Rodgers is rejuvenated, but he has injury history, a 43-year-old quarterback. I think that's too many yards. And then another part of let's talk about the spreadsheet is look at the competition, look at certain weeks. Week 11 for Pittsburgh at Philadelphia. Week 12, they play Denver. Week 13, Houston. Week 14 at Jacksonville. Week 15, Baltimore. And I look at that schedule right there, a game and a half, a turned ankle, a tight hamstring. I think he gets off that total and it takes him off of basically where he's going. So 43-year-old quarterback, I'm taking the under of his passing total.
Yeah, I mean, personally, it's going to take a lot for me to bet any overs, especially with a guy like you said, 43 for the first time in his life. And I mean, at some point, yes, he did look fine at times and his mind was fairly sharp, but I don't know, man, there's not a lot of 40-year-old quarterbacks who thrive. So there's a reason for that. So the body, we know about the torn Achilles in his opener with the Jets. You don't root for that, but you have to budget that in, obviously, along those lines. I think another interesting storyline is Kyler Murray, obviously criticized with Arizona for not being prepared, not putting in the work. Now he goes to Minnesota with Kevin O'Connell, who did wonders with Sam Darnold and went to the playoffs. Obviously, Murray's a different animal with the jitterbug, sort of the dual threat that we haven't seen KOC have. His passing yards prop, 3,050, essentially, 3,049 and a half. Where are you headed?
Once again, Doug, we think alike. I'm going under here in any type of quarterback total, just whoever it is, Kyler Murray or Dan Marino in his prime, I don't care. I'm going to look at the under because, as you said, injuries and bad luck can certainly happen. So taking the under, and I'm taking narrative into account here, besides Kyler Murray's injury history and inconsistency, all we hear about now is Kevin O'Connell can do this for a quarterback. Kevin O'Connell has this great track record. Well, what did Kevin O'Connell do for J.J. McCarthy? So I think you have to put that into the mix here. And yes, Kyler Murray has won the starting job, but injury history and with J.J. McCarthy there, a game, a bad game, maybe a game and a half that's not too good, he can easily be taken out. And I just think if you look at it with that total, he has to average basically 180 passing yards a week. It doesn't sound that much. Oh, Kyler Murray, he can do that. Well, what if you miss a game? What if you miss a couple quarters? What if you get benched for a little bit? So I think all these different variables and factors are working against Kyler Murray. And as you said, they probably work against just about every quarterback in the league. So I'm gladly going to take the passing total under for Murray, because right now, before the season started, really the only narrative we hear is, yes, he's a starter, but I think that can go away very quickly.
Yeah, and I got to be honest, betting against Murray and watching, a lot of time he thrived when they were down three touchdowns and it was prevent defense. And he would sort of take what the defense gave him, and sometimes I was just running for a first down, and a lot of teams were keeping everything in front of him. So I don't know if he's a drop-back passer for four full quarters. I respect Kevin O'Connell and things like that, and they have a good defense, top seven for three straight years with Flores running the defense, but I definitely proceed with caution there, and who knows? J.J. McCarthy may get another chance. They love nine, right? Another running back future, we're talking with Aaron Moore, the professor, VSiN contributor here. You like a prop involving Omarion Hampton, who I think is really interesting with the Chargers, given Mike McDaniel comes over, former head coach of the Dolphins, but he's now the OC here with the Bolt.
Narrative plays a big role in this situation. So I'm taking Omarion Hampton over 7.5 total rush touchdowns. So the key here is rush touchdowns. When Mike McDaniel had a press conference earlier this week, he talked about the three running backs the Chargers have. They have Hampton, they have Kamani Vidal, they have Keaton Mitchell. And the new offensive coordinator was talking about how he loved all three guys, and he wasn't sure who's going to be the key back in certain situations. Well, that 7.5 that we have now, that was 8.5 rushing touchdowns prior. So I think the narrative has gone against Hampton, but let's look at legitimately what's going to happen in this situation. Yes, the Chargers have three running backs, but they have really one power back in Omarion Hampton. He becomes the goal line situation. And last year he showed really good signs as a rookie, but then had a little bit of an injury bug at the end of the season. Chargers also brought, besides Mike McDaniel, the fullback Alec Ingold in. And I think he's going to help Hampton on the goal line. That was one of the problems the Chargers had last year, was punching the ball in on the goal line. So they have Ingold. And just looking, Doug, at week one of the preseason, what I saw with that Chargers offense with McDaniel in the first two drives when they had some of their starters in there, far more motion, moving running backs, moving tight ends around. I think it's going to help the Chargers as a offense near the goal line, inside the five-yard line. And if you've got these running backs, who are you going to give the ball to? It's the big power guy in Omarion Hampton. So now you can get that total at 7.5 when it was at 8.5. That's a discount I'll gladly take here. So give me Hampton over 7.5 rushing touchdowns.
We have a couple minutes to go. Any concern for you with Justin Herbert in this offense? I was expecting big things. I think the world of Mike McDaniel is play calling, but with all these things with Herbert getting engaged and he's got his fiance at practice, and any of this stuff actually factor into your handicapping and what you're sort of envisioning for the upcoming season?
Boy, I wish I was at practice with Justin Herbert's fiance, new wife. Wow, that's a great problem to have if you're Justin Herbert. Now, if you're a Chargers fan or an NFL bettor, you have to look at it. Now, could he possibly be distracted? I don't necessarily think he's going to be distracted. I think it's a good media story. There was some video, there was some talking points, social media chatter, but I don't think so from a playing standpoint. What we've seen with Herbert so far with the Chargers and McDaniel, he's changed his footwork. He's going to expect Herbert to pass the ball quicker than he did in the Greg Roman style. So yes, maybe there's some off the field stuff that's different, but what's on the field is different for Herbert. And I really think, Doug, it's going to pay dividends for him. He's one of the plays I have 11-1 to win the MVP. I think that's a pretty good play that you can get right now, when the other usual suspects for quarterbacks, all of them have a little bit of an issue here and there. So I like Herbert 11-1 to win the MVP.
I want to talk more about some futures. Aaron, I know it's late on the East Coast. You mind sticking around for another segment?
Sure, let's do it.
All right, cool. We're approaching the top of the hour here. By the way, second round, about midway through the second round, the main event, all speculation is that Islam Makhachev took the first round, and he's been kind of dominating the second round so far, minus 1450 favorite. But Ian Gary, holding his own a little bit. We shall see if he can extend this fight, maybe get back into the fight. You are listening to Cashing Out on VSiN, the sports betting network. More with the professor and my favorite NFL win total straight ahead.